This is Party Line on WILO 1570 AM and 96.9 FM. At your side since 1960. This is your forum for public opinion and comment. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent the views of WILO management, employees, or sponsors. If you're listening live at 8:30, you're invited to give us a call locally at 765-93338 or toll free at 1-800-447-4463. If you're listening to this program encore broadcast, don't call, just enjoy the show. Now let's join Party Line on 1570 AM and 96.9 FM WILO.
Good morning and welcome to Party Line. Our sponsors are Welty Custom Exteriors, Welty Works for You, Susan Casper State Farm Insurance, like a good neighbor, Susan is there, Encompass Credit Union, community-minded just like you, Milner Healthcare, Ivy Tech Community College, Changing Lives, Simple Time Antiques, Step Back into a Simple Time, along with ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, your free local online newspaper. I am Ken, and I'm filling in for Kevin today. We're going to have our guest is Tony Summer. We'll get to him here in a couple minutes. He's our Clinton County prosecutor. We'll do that until 9 o'clock or a little bit after. Then after that, we're going to have an open line this morning from that point on. Let's get to the weather right off the top, because that's usually what's on most people's minds right now. We do have a winter storm watch. It's in effect from late tonight through late tomorrow night. For today, cloudy with a high of 32, slight chance of snow and snow after midnight with accumulation of less than an inch tonight with a low of 30. Tomorrow, snow accumulations of 3 to 4 inches, windy, total snow accumulations of about 4 to 6 inches in this storm. High of 31, temperatures will steady or slowly fall in the afternoon tomorrow. Tomorrow night, much colder, mostly cloudy and very windy, a low of 6, wind chill reading 7 below to 3 above. And then on Sunday, colder, mostly sunny with a high of only 14, wind chill readings of 8 below to 2 above 0, going down to 2 below Sunday night. Then on Martin Luther King Monday, mostly sunny with a high of only 18 degrees. But it does start to warm up a little bit after Monday, so it starts getting a little bit better. But then we're going to be right back into the same scenario again next weekend. So just keep tuned, because we're going to be in this for a while. Two or three things we do need to mention about how, with all this stuff that's coming up. A special meeting that was called by Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes and Center Township Trustee Kevin Evans. Yesterday, that meeting included the United Nonprofits of Clinton County, Center Township of Clinton County, the City of Frankfort, and First Responders and Community Schools of Frankfort. The meeting highlighted the need for an emergency warming center that will be open from Saturday, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning to noon on Monday the 21st. This will be over at Green Meadows Elementary School. That's located at 1900 South Jackson Street. If you need assistance to get to the warming center or to find someone in need, you need to call dispatch at 654-5563. Otherwise, if you want to be a volunteer, you can call Center Township at 765-601-4232, or you can email kevans at centertownshipofclintoncounty.com. Things that were scheduled for tomorrow that have been canceled: the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce announced yesterday afternoon that the first legislative breakfast of the season has been canceled. That was scheduled for Harmony Hall in Wesley Manor. And this one will not be rescheduled, since there were four events of these things scheduled. The next legislative breakfast is set for Saturday, February the 16th at 8:30 in Wesley Manor's Harmony Hall. Also, the Frankfort Community Public Library announced late yesterday afternoon that the Friends of the Frankfort Library concert series featuring electric violinist Kathy Morris has also been canceled due to the inclement weather that's forecast for this weekend. She was scheduled to perform Saturday night in the Scana Theater. The concert will be rescheduled as soon as a date can be confirmed. Also, to remind you, anyone that has purchased tickets for the concert or has tickets for this concert should hold on to them, because these tickets will be valid when the concert is rescheduled. So just make sure you hang on to your tickets for that concert involving Kathy Morris over at the Frankfort Community Public Library. I'm going to welcome in our guest now, who's Clinton County Prosecutor Tony Summer. Tony, good morning. How are you doing?
Pretty well. How are you?
Doing well. Just trying to get through this winter time of year for us.
Right, right.
So it's always so much fun doing that. We were talking a little bit before the show. Last time you were in here, you were talking about you weren't sure if you had a record amount of filings for last year, but I think it turned out that you did.
Yes, we did wind up having a record number of filings. Not by as many cases as maybe we thought we were going to have, but our previous high had been 1,401 cases in 2010. This past year, we did file 1,423 cases, so about 22 cases higher than the prior highest filing year that we'd had. And that's on top of a fairly high filing year last year, 2017, 1,376 cases. So a couple of heavy years in a row. The bulk of the heavy filing would have been misdemeanor cases for possession and alcohol-related offenses that were filed in our superior court.
Okay. The other day, the governor, Eric Holcomb, decided he wanted to come up with a couple new laws. I want to get your opinions on. Number one, he thought there should be a hate crimes law. What's your thoughts on that?
A hate crime really is just a category to designate the crime committed. Sometimes such a bill will provide for enhancements on the penalties. But in fact, all of the things that are hate crimes are already crimes in the law. So it's a matter of pulling out those crimes that have a particular animus behind them that can be identified and either identifying them as such or perhaps enhancing the penalties. I'm not opposed to it. Then again, it doesn't necessarily give me much of a new tool to be able to address issues. We have seen very few crimes in this county in the past 12 years that would come even close to being designated as a hate crime.
I would take it in that situation, you'd have to, it's almost like trying to prove intent.
Well, it's a matter of proving motivation.
Okay.
That the motivation was a motivation that was, based on gender, race, religion, creed, some factor that had an animus that was impermissible. But you prove that that's the motivation for the crime.
Also, they wanted to, there's a law out there right now that wants to change the age for youth to be tried as an adult, specifically the situation happened over Noblesville this year.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be in favor of that or not?
It's really problematic trying someone as young as 12 years of age as an adult. We have seen in the past, before laws were changed going the other direction, children as young as 13 that were being tried as adult under prior law in the state of Indiana. Because of the outcomes in those cases is why we have the law that we have now. So it's kind of a pendulum that swings back and forth, and I appreciate that in those cases, victims of the crime, the public generally feel like the penalties that are available in the juvenile system are insufficient. But also bear in mind that over the long term, what typically happens with a young offender like that, even if they are tried as an adult, is that there are going to be modifications of sentence on down the road as they get older. Typically, a young person kind of ages out of some of the problems that they have as a young person, as their brain develops, as their values change.
You know, and also when you've been on here, you've talked about some things you'd like to see as far as, you know, sentencing and all those kind of things. Has much of that changed for this next year, or is it still basically the same?
Right now, we're still dealing with the same program that was given to us largely in 2014, and we are still struggling with a high number of offenders that previously would have gone to prison who are staying in the local system. Continues to put pressure on community corrections and probation here in the county. Our jail continues to run closer to capacity than what it previously did because of those changes in the sentencing laws. We are seeing a higher number of repeat offenses from offenders who, while they're being kept local for treatment, commit new offenses that we would not have seen in the past because they're an offender that in the past would have been in the Department of Corrections and not out in the public and able to commit offenses. So it's an experiment, and I think that there'll be adjustment over time as to how these sentences are handled. But right now, as the judges work with the sentencing parameters that we have, we're seeing somewhat lower sentences, and we're seeing more treatment at the local level.
Would you anticipate, if they change, would you anticipate getting some stiffer sentences out there?
Yes, that's what I would anticipate, but only as appropriate, given an offender's history and the particular crime that they've committed. But that's the way that it used to be, and that's part of the whole dialogue and the narrative behind the need for sentencing reform is that too many people were being sent to prison for nonviolent crimes, the basic idea that, somebody was going to prison for having a joint or that somebody was going to prison for stealing a pack of gum at a convenience store. Not really the case, never was the case. There are cases where after you've committed four or five thefts, that by the time you get to the sixth or seventh, that the penalty needs to be more harsh.
Mm-hmm.
Something has to get through to a person to stop doing what they've been doing. And the same with substance offenses.
Do you think that the vaping situation that is developed is going to turn into like a substance abuse fine eventually or charge? You ever see that happening?
I don't know if it's going to turn into an abuse scenario. It depends on if vaping takes a turn into the whole legalization of marijuana that's going on around the country. Not legalized in Indiana yet. We have seen an increase in marijuana offenses because of the changing attitudes and greater availability, apparently, of marijuana. It is possible already to get the vape cartridges that can be used that have THC. Mm-hmm. What people don't understand, I think, about THC, most people associate marijuana with, you know, a joint being passed at a concert. And, you know, back in the 70s, THC content in that marijuana was probably about 5%. Today, the THC content of marijuana is much higher. It's closer to 25%. And in the stuff that is being manufactured, it's even purer and higher, more highly concentrated yet. And so think of the difference between beer and whiskey in terms of alcohol content. That's kind of the difference between the marijuana that people tend to think of and what's available today. It's like the difference between beer and hard liquor. And so I don't think that it's well understood the impacts that high THC content products can have on a person's health. And I think that it needs to be studied much more carefully. The legalization is jumping forward because of changing attitudes. What I would expect is that after a while, it'll be reined in because of repercussions.
That was my next question. You know, I know it's not legal yet in the state, but I have a feeling, and I think you do too, that's going to happen here fairly quick.
I think it's coming. There have been attempts to legalize marijuana. We already have legalization efforts that have gone forward that haven't been successful, but they keep trying. We've seen non-THC or low-THC products legalized, and that's pretty much been nationwide, including Indiana, sometimes referred to as CBD oil. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen that move forward. And then we've seen continued efforts related to medical marijuana, which is kind of a, you know, foot in the door kind of an issue. And then beyond that, you have the legalization of just recreational use marijuana. And that's what I really do anticipate that we'll see eventually.
Has there been any major changes in the drug usage here or the types of drugs or drug arrests that you had? And if so, what are they?
Well, I appreciate you asking that because it was a topic that I wanted to bring up today. You know, we our serious abuse issues have been related to heroin and methamphetamine. And so we've been seeing that now for the last 5 years anyway. At one point, heroin and opiate-related substances were the substances that we were seeing the most problems with, and we had a dramatic increase in overdoses. No firm numbers have ever been given to me, but under the circumstances, you know, we kept hearing about overdoses, and we knew that there were cases where our defendants weren't available anymore because they died because of overdoses. And so we did look at that as a serious problem and tried to get the cooperation of local law enforcement to address. And by and large, I think that there's been a lot of success in trying to engage in enforcement related to heroin use. But we've seen heroin now receding. Not that it's gone. Don't get me wrong.
No, I didn't think it was.
It's not gone, okay? But what we have seen is a resurgence of methamphetamine. And so we've had a lot more methamphetamine charges here lately than we have heroin charges. The methamphetamine that we're seeing now, though, is not the methamphetamine that is produced in somebody's kitchen sink or bathtub like we were seeing for a while. We're seeing methamphetamine that is pure, white, crystalline powder that's been produced in a laboratory, and we're given to believe that that's coming up from Mexico. So it's something that's not produced locally. It's being distributed along the same lines as marijuana and cocaine. So we're seeing that kind of methamphetamine now. The point that I wanted to reach today, though, that's been a change just recently. We've had a couple of cases in the last week where fentanyl is being mixed into the methamphetamine. And I wanted to bring that up. Fentanyl is synthetic heroin. It is 8 times more powerful than heroin itself, and it's what was causing overdoses when our heroin users were getting fentanyl in their heroin or pure fentanyl rather than heroin, because it was more potent. That was leading to an increase in overdoses. Now we're seeing fentanyl being mixed into the methamphetamine. And so I want to give a caution to people out there, users, people who know users, have users in your family or friends, that fentanyl, very powerful, can lead to an overdose. A person who goes unresponsive after using, they need immediate medical attention. One of the things that can be life-saving for them is naloxone, commonly called Narcan. That's one of the brands.
Right.
Police have that. First responders have that. But you know what? You can even get it. You can go to a CVS and you can get Narcan so that you have it on hand. And so the other point to bring out about that is, whereas a heroin overdose may take 1 or 2 treatments of Narcan in order to revive the person, we recently had a person that took 8 treatments of the Narcan in order to overcome, because fentanyl was involved. And so that's what you have to keep in mind, is that, you know, it's a matter of saving somebody's life. And so I've always said that every human life has value. And so people just need to recognize that it's out there. It can happen that way. Someone who is a methamphetamine user is not necessarily prepared to overdose on an opiate-based substance.
Right. You basically hit on basically the next question I was going to ask, and that was just how big of a problem has fentanyl become? I take it by what you're saying, it's become a tremendously big problem.
It's a problem that probably only manifests itself within a small percentage of our community. I mean, within our community of 33,000 approximately, we probably only have, what, 4 dozen that are 4 dozen people who are hardcore users. And so all of the problems that we deal with that relate to methamphetamine and heroin use involve a small component of our community.
Okay. Well, I'll just get to the other elephant that's always in the room, and that's the government shutdown. Have you guys been affected yet by the shutdown of any kind?
No, we haven't seen any result yet with regard to the government shutdown. There are components of what my office does that do rely upon grant monies. The grants are administered by the Criminal Justice Institute. That's a state agency. But they are communicating and coordinating those grant funds with the Department of Justice, a federal agency. And so in long term, if it goes long enough, I suppose that we could see some impact in what we're doing. But I haven't yet. And thus far, in cases, which I don't have that many cases that involve witnesses from federal agencies, but I did have one here recently, and all of my witnesses were still available even during the shutdown.
I noticed that the big thing, of course, is still the border wall, and there was a story that came out of Yuma, Arizona this morning where a group of people, I don't know if it said 40 or 400, I can't remember what it said, got under the wall and went over into Yuma last night or this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So is the wall worth all this stuff, or have we had better agents? You know, do they start need to do their job, or how's the best way to go about doing this?
Well, I mean, the agents certainly need the support and the personnel to handle the problem. It sounds like the Border Patrol is understaffed and underfunded, so they need better funding. Physical impediments to entry to the country seem to be lacking. Whether it's a wall or some other kind of physical impediment, to me, I'm not in a position to say which is best. But it's clear that there needs to be something, because there's no respect for the idea that you need to follow a process to enter the country. And so it's not like border security says, don't come to our country. It says, come to our country through the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And so I agree with that philosophy, and I think that security on the border does need to be improved. It's a common occurrence here in this community, far removed from any border, that we have people who are appearing in the court on criminal cases who have entered the country illegally. It's not anything that we are in a position to deal with, but we know it, and what happens is when a person's in custody in the Clinton County Jail, the Immigration Customs Enforcement will come and interview people. And some of them, they will put detainers on so that they have to go for hearings in Indianapolis. Following a hearing in Indianapolis, if there's a challenge to removal, then it's set over for a hearing in Chicago. And so we know that that happens with a number of our offenders. We lose offenders who are pending on local criminal charges because they're removed from the country. But we also know that after they're removed from the country, we see them back in about a week. Mm-hmm. They're back here in this community in about a week.
Does that mean that ICE really isn't doing their job, or are they restricted by what they can and can't do?
No, they're doing their job, but it's so easy to return to this country if you're just going to come across a border that's not secure.
Well, we also know that a steel wall really isn't going to be the fact the solution, because if they saw a hole, it was sawed through it. So that definitely is not going to help matters.
I depends on how it's constructed and what kind of security monitoring is available. I'm in no position to say whether steel or concrete or whatever is best. But clearly, there's a lack of security, and people can cross our southern border whenever, wherever they want.
But, and also the fact of the matter is they're also getting into, a lot of them are getting into legal ports of entry, too.
Well, I think that the statistics are that the majority of people who are here illegally actually came here initially on a student or a work visa and then overstayed. And so that goes back to the idea of Immigration Customs Enforcement not having the staff and the funding to be able to address all the problems. They can't get around to all those people and find them to take action on them overstaying their visas.
Okay. If President Trump were to declare a national emergency, can he really do that? Do you think he would have a challenge in the courts, or what do you think?
Well, I think he'll have challenges in the courts because we seem to have a certain component of our society within our political society that is firmly committed to just allowing the situation to continue. That's really the sense that I get. They want this situation to continue.
I'll ask this in a second because we got a caller here for you, so let's go ahead and take a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to disagree with Tony about the wall.
Okay.
Sure.
The only effective wall I know is the one in Eastern Europe, and they have machine gun towers there so many yards and minefields around them. The wall itself is not going to be effective. And if they would they got sensors in the ground, and then people come across the border. And by the time the Border Patrol can react, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, that tells you your Border Patrol is undermanned and not stationed in the right places.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what you're saying in terms of the issues related to trying to improve security, that it's going to take a combination of personnel and physical impediments to entry, because that's what I hear you saying. But in the end, do I want to see a concrete wall or something like the Wall of China manned with machine gun towers? No, I really don't. I don't think it should have to be that way. I don't see the military being in a position to shoot somebody within a neutral zone approaching the country. Do you?
No, I don't. That's one of the reasons I'm against the wall. My argument has always been...
Let me ask you this then. So your idea in the meantime is just let them come on in? Is that
no. Okay. You didn't? No, 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 no. They okay. have sensors. I watched that program called Border Wars,
mm-hmm.
and they would have a sensor trips.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time the Border Patrol could get there, the people right. were gone.
No, I understand. Yeah, I agree. I've seen some of the same programming. But under the circumstances, then, if you're not going to have physical impediments, where are you suggesting that the Border Patrol is going to interdict these people and remove them?
I would say yes. I would have quick response forces
mm-hmm.
with helicopters, more helicopters than they got, so they can respond better. And if you have a quick response force...
Mm-hmm.
There's so many miles where they could respond within, say, 5 to 10 minutes. like the people would be on alert all the time on a shift, like 12-hour shift.
Well, my experience with such operations is that people and machinery that needs maintenance costs a lot more than capital assets like walls.
Well, the wall is going to cost a lot more than most people think because you're going to have to condemn some property.
Well, I know it's going to cost more than what's even been proposed at this point by President Trump, but under the circumstances, I still say that people being stationed out there with helicopters and vehicles that they're going to operate, that's going to cost a lot more than some of the infrastructure that could be built that would slow down the entry and allow for a reduction in the number of people that you have to have there to respond to those who still enter illegally.
Okay, then I'm going to make one more comment. I'm not totally disagreeing with you. I just disagree about the wall itself.
I understand.
If Congress several years ago passed a law called E-Verify,
right,
if they would enforce that law, and start punishing employers who hired illegal immigrants. And it's not hard to realize that they're illegal if they come up with a name that, like a person told me, there was four people with the same name in the factory she worked in.
Oh, yeah, sure.
If they would enforce that law, that would reduce the illegal immigrants by 90%.
And that comes back to the idea of enforcement personnel to be able to address those issues. But beyond that, in terms of who the penalty should be imposed upon, I do think that our government is hesitant to impose penalties upon businesses and business owners. I think that so far the idea has been that the penalty should be addressed to those who have entered illegally. And when I say penalties, I mean, I still think that there's a whole lot of compassion that's involved as this country has looked at this question. I think there's a realization that the majority of people who are entering this country illegally do so for economic reasons. They're just trying to better themselves. They're just looking for employment that actually gives them better pay. And those are not initiatives that, by and large, people in this country disagree with. They just want it to happen legally.
I understand, and that's why I say that employers, they would start first. That's where a lot of it would stop or slow down.
Well,
and I've been arguing about illegal immigrants way before you become prosecutor.
Oh, I know.
I started in the early 90s complaining about them on the radio.
It's been around for a long time as a problem. What I would say is, employers is one place, and another thing would be in public benefit programs.
I agree.
And so,
I don't disagree a bit.
Yep. So,
but they didn't do that. And if you listen to Wilo enough, you would hear that gentleman has a agriculture program.
Mm-hmm.
Him and many of his other people would complain about the ICE cracking down on the immigrants because they were using them
right
to do their field work.
Sure.
Because they could pay them a lot less.
Right.
And that's the problem. To me, that is a problem.
Well, it's the motivation that's part of the engine for what we have. Yes, it's driving the problem. I agree.
And I'm sorry to bother you. We'll let you go.
Okay.
All right. Take care. All right.
Bye.
Bye. Tony, before we get you out of here, I got to ask you one more thing. Are we going to see any major changes or goals that you want to have for 2019?
Well, I guess one of the major changes we had, the Clinton County Council worked with me to fund my sex crime deputy prosecutor at full time. And I do have a new full time deputy prosecutor in the office. Her name is Christina Gull. She comes to us from Marion County. That was where she previously had been working. We had seen something of an uptick in crimes against children and sex crimes here in the county. We were carrying a little over 30 open cases, which is a fairly heavy load for those kinds of cases. We're down to about 16 of those cases right now. But now I have a full-time deputy prosecutor who can devote time to that and attention to the victims in those cases. So I appreciate the council supporting me and allowing me to do that.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add before I let you go?
No, I'm not going to be back in, I don't think, before Valentine's Day. So wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day.
All right. You take good care. It's always fun to have you in here. Take care. Thank you. Thanks, Tony. We're going to take a break right now. Our sponsors are Wealthy Custom Exteriors, Susan Casper State Farm Insurance, and Couples Credit Union, Milner Healthcare, Ivy Tech Community College, Simple Time Antiques, and Clinton.